Welcome to the Mike and Doug Show, also called the Gabriel and McKibben Show, also called American Intelligence Media and Americans for Innovation. Today, the great miner who has dug all the way through the earth to China and come back has found us finally here, and he's come up out of the caves and the mines, and he says that he's got the piece that connects it all. Okay, so here we are. We're going to give you the linchpin, but this linchpin, this keystone is, in fact, all you're going to need to take everything we've been doing for the last year and bring it right up into the modern age so that all you have to do is the following. When you know somebody's evil, you look them up and see if they're a Pilgrim Society member. And if they are, you walk up to them and say, "You're a Pilgrim Society member." And they say, "Yes, I am." And they say, "Then give me your resignation right now because you work for the Queen. You are a loyalist. You are a British agent. And you are working against America. And now you have taken this back. And you've made me go back and do all this research on some this cabal of people at the end of World War II is still ruling our world today. Tell us about it.
Whoa. tell us about
the history.
History from the last 120 years.
Kissinger still ruling the world. Some people say Kissinger has been ruling us since 1943, I believe they say, or 41.
43 was when he joined the army and was an intelligence officer in the army. And he quickly started working for all the senior intelligence people out of the expeditionary office in London. And it's very clear that he was recruited early with the Rockefellers hanging around in the background to do everything he's done since the war, and that he was personally taken under the wing of many Pilgrim Society members in London. That's not even a question now. And what we have been able to do, and this is a lot of people involved in this, was to actually tie him directly to the Pilgrim Society with their own documents.
And you have pictures of all of the criminals that we've been highlighting now for the last year standing in the same place, you know, guffawing, laughing, slapping each other on the back, saying, "Hey, our globalist plan, our Pilgrim Society is working," because people think it's just a dinner club. But because you have in the last few weeks and your miners discovered that the Pilgrim Society flew under the banner of the William Donovan, whatever they called it, and then it became
William Donovan Memorial Foundation.
Yeah, and now it's the Pilgrim Society as a 501c3 in America. And they are so partisan, and they take vows to the Queen, and they get knighted by the Queen, and they take oaths of fealty to the Queen, which is illegal, and you cannot be an American and stay in America unless you want to be in a jail and be called a traitor, treason, sedition, subversion, whatever you want, but that's what you've discovered. And you've discovered, and it made me go back, and all the people connected to this. The one that I went crazy on was Averill Harriman. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to talk much about him, but he was right there with Charles Dawes. He was right there with Sarnoff and Wild Bill Donovan. He was there with Kissinger. And I want to say this about Kissinger. Kissinger was born Heinz Loeb, or Loeb, L-O-B, okay? And he changed his name because he was Jewish, and he somehow magically got out of Germany and went to London, and he still speaks with an English accent and still won't lose his German accent. And I believe that he was a made man when he went to London and stayed there when he was young. And then he came to America, and he was drafted. He didn't join the war. And the second that he got in and they took him to Germany, what did they say? "Hey, you speak German. We need to get all the ex-SS officers, or gather these SS officers and squeeze out of them the truth about where the money, the diamonds, the jewels, the treasure is." He was so good at that. They moved him to intelligence immediately. He promoted him. Then he was so good at that, they moved him to counterintelligence.
Can I interrupt you? Now we know this. Now some of these stories are starting to come into focus. Who else was doing that kind of confiscation of property in Hungary at the same exact time?
George Soros. They're twins. And of course, Heinz Loeb, Henry Kissinger, turned on his own people, and George Soros turned on his own people, and they were both Jews, and they sent Jews to their deaths and confiscated their goods. That's what Henry Kissinger started off doing, stealing. He was a thief, and because he was so involved with getting so much German treasure that he got connected to the bankers who then had to handle this stuff that they were finding. And then you've produced the documents that show that literally we have the Senate and the Congress in America arguing about, well, you know, there's $500 million worth of gold here, and what are we going to do with it? And of course, there's a whole lot that's missing. There's not a, this is just the tip of the iceberg, but we do know that William Donovan brought it over, and we know that it was confiscated. And should we give it back to the Germans and the people they stole it from, or should we not, or just send it to the Bank for International Settlement and let them, to this very day, control the world economy through Paul Volcker, who you're going to talk about in a minute, and the other criminals, who are all Skull and Bones members, by the way. I just found this out. These are all Skull and Bones members from Yale. And Averill Harriman was their boss. Why? Because he married a Churchill, who was one of the richest people around. And when he married her, he became so filthy rich that he became the kingpin British controller of our White House and everything else. And you just look at his history. He's just like Henry Kissinger. Averill Harriman and Henry Kissinger are two peas in a pod, but Henry Kissinger has controlled our political foreign policy since the time that he was, as soon as he got an education, he joined the Council on Foreign Relations, he became the guru of all of our foreign policy. And Paul Volcker has controlled our entire economy through huge amounts of time throughout this all time, also in all the different positions he's been in. And to this very minute, we are still living in the residue of the foreign policy ideas of Kissinger and the U.S. Federal Reserve ripoff ideas of Paul Volcker. And they're both Pilgrim Society members. They both need to go to jail.
Well, let's remember that when after he finished all his education and his higher education at Harvard, he pretty much was exclusive Harvard. He started working, actually writing foreign policy for the Rockefeller Foundation. That's where he met his first wife. And then also we discovered that Volcker was already working for the Rockefeller Foundation. So we see them from their early youth days after the war were two peas in a pod with the Rockefellers. And it's easy to get lost in all these revelations, I think. And what was remarkable about some new discoveries is that we found evidence through IRS records that Volcker and Kissinger were appointed vice presidents of the American Pilgrim Society in 2007 and 2008. And why is that significant? Because obviously that was the setup for what became the 2008 bank bailout. And it's evident from looking at the record that it's possible Kissinger had been a vice president for a number of years before that, according to their own records. But definitely Volcker and him were on the IRS forms. And why is this important? Because since he's now identifying himself in his own forms as a member of the, actually an officer of the Pilgrim Society, the question is, did he disclose that relationship while he was a public figure in the U.S.? So for that, he did several disclosures, but the big one was the interview for him as Secretary of State in 1973. And in this voluminous record of all of the testimony, he discloses all sorts of relationships. Even says, I was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and gave them policy advice and blah, blah, blah. But in all that, he never mentions the Pilgrim Society, ever. And so that was early on. That was in January, I believe, of 73. And by the time he got his legs in the new administration, by December of that year, he actually launched the what we now know as the Arab oil crisis or energy crisis at a Pilgrim Society meeting in London on December 12th of 1973. And that's evidence, that's hard evidence of a relationship with the Pilgrim Society that, and once you're in the Pilgrim Society, you're never out of it. Because you're not in it unless you've already done some favor for the inner group. And once you're in, they take care of you. And so the question is, how early on did Kissinger and Volcker become members of the Pilgrim Society? And we believe it was in the late 40s. It was at the time that Kissinger was working for the U.S. Army Intelligence, when MI5, MI6, and GCHQ teamed up with the FBI, CIA, and NSA to form something called Five Eyes in 1946. And that was when David Sarnoff was also working for Eisenhower at that same time. So we see later that Sarnoff became a Pilgrim Society member, and there are even documents that show Kissinger and Sarnoff together. So the obscene thing about what these guys were doing is, as public figures, they know darn well that their membership in the Pilgrim Society was a material disclosure, something that the American public really needed to know about them in order to judge their ability to act for the American people and not for their own personal interests. They all knew that. And the most massive fraud we think that we've ever seen in the American government is all of the confirmation hearings for all the Nixon cabinet in 1973. And what we have there are Volcker, Alexander Haig, Henry Kissinger, George Shultz, Caspar Weinberger. We've now looked up all of their confirmation records. And Douglas, do you think we even found one reference to the Pilgrim Society?
Of course not. It's a secret society.
That's right. Well,
by the way, that's not okay. No, it's not okay. And it's run by the Queen at that moment, but it's run by the British monarchy. And if you are a member in Britain, you're a member in America. If you're a member in America, you're a member.
That's on their current website. So we now have records of the Nixon White House in the fall of the summer, August 13th through the 15th, when the cabinet, the economic cabinet, met at Camp David, and they actually decided at that meeting that they were going to take the U.S. off of the gold reserve, gold standard. And all of these players I've just mentioned were there. And why is this significant? Well, now that we have seen the way these people were attempting at the end of World War II to gain control of all of the gold that was stolen by the Nazis and the Japanese, and rather than give it back to the people it was robbed, who were robbed, it was mostly sent to the Bank for International Settlements in Zurich, Switzerland. Actually, there's three: Basel, Bern, and Zurich are the three locations that always come up with this Bank for International Settlements. And what we now see is that these guys realized that because this confiscation was secret, and because FDR and Truman decided not to require them to disclose this to the public, these guys were on a feeding frenzy to figure out ways to use that gold to maintain permanent control over the economies of the world. And that is exactly what they have done. And that gold meeting at Camp David was the kickoff meeting for that. And tellingly, and this is all documented in the material that I think Betsy's going to post, The very next day, after that decision was made on August 15th, Paul Volcker got on a plane and went by 4 o'clock the next day in London, which means less than 12 hours, he was meeting with all of the heads of the national banks, the state banks for France, for Japan, Germany, Italy, France, and the UK, besides us. And he was announcing this program that would take us off the gold standard. And so I'll ask you, Douglas, why do you think, what was their purpose in taking us off the gold standard?
Well, it's very complicated. But when you know that the Yamashita gold, how much was reported and how much was reported by the Nazi gold, you basically realize that if that gold was brought into the market, it would collapse all the currencies that were connected to gold. So they had to decouple the American dollar from gold. And at the same time, Henry Kissinger then knew that he was shifting over to the OPEC dollar or the petroleum dollar. And that was a deal done, of course, with the British, the French, and the Anglo-Americans. And what's so the gold is still right now in gold numbered accounts in Zurich, right at the Zurich airport. So you can pull your airplane right up and put it into the vault. No one ever gets to see who's loading and unloading or how much is there because it's all numbered accounts. Because we, of course, SEC and FTC, other agencies went after all these numbered accounts in Switzerland and offshore accounts. And so they put it into bullion. Why did they allow bullion? Because they know that there is a huge amount of bullion owned by who? That would be the OSS, the CIA, what I call the rogue CIA. The OSS was basically America's response to the British telling us how to get ready for war propaganda. And I just want to throw this out. World War I and II were both created by the Pilgrim Society.
Correct.
It's a 200-year plan, and you have now tracked it back to infinitesimal detail of exactly who did what, where, when, and how, and gave the evidence. So that gold is the key to central banks, because the Bank for International Settlement controls all central banks. It also controls all clearing for derivatives. And there are more derivative bets in the world than all the currency in the world at this moment. And that's all fake and it's all a lie, but that's the way the banks do it. The banks buy longs, shorts, derivative betting on assets. And then when they get in trouble, they lease, loan, or have a false auditor come in and state that gold loaned to them from other central banks and or the Bank for International Settlement covers their shorts because the banks are doing fractional banking down to zero. So the banks don't have any of the money you give them anymore. And that's why there's a shortage on currency in America. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. The point is the gold had to be taken off the standard because there was almost as much gold that they found and they didn't know what to do with as there was backing currency. So if the gold was brought out, then the currency, gold drops to half, the currency drops to half. That and it was already a very, very bad time. And they knew this was going to be the case after World War I and II. And that's the reason Charles Dawes, after the war, along with Edwin Pauly and Averell Harriman, who I didn't know was one of the key, coordinators of the Marshall Plan. Though he didn't even have an official office. He was just, he roamed around and did whatever he wanted. And wherever you follow Averell Harriman, you follow incredible crime to the point that, you know, that was the bank, his bank, Harriman Brown Brothers was Union Bank, which was charged with collaborating with the Nazis. He was the Nazi banker, as well as some British bankers, and Fritz Thyssen and others. So you get Prescott Bush coming out of that. So Averell Harriman basically created Prescott Bush that created the Bush families and that created Riggs Bank and all these other completely crooked banks. So the point is, war is started so there can be destabilization, so you can steal the wealth of other nations, but then you have to be careful how you bring it back into the market, because there is no market if you have as much gold in hiding as there is gold out there that's controlling the currencies. Then there is no free market. And that's the bad news. So these criminals like Henry Kissinger, who knew these because he was collecting all that stuff, he then got associated with bankers and then literally became a follower of the British Empire's hegemony plan. And he's known it all along. And his clash of nations theory that he promotes all the time, that everyone below the supernation must be at war. Look at what happened when he was aiding the White House. There's so many wars. He created all those wars. They say, oh, he got the peace prize for Vietnam. He created the nonsense, and he didn't create the false flag, but he created the continuation in Cambodia and Laos. And I can't even name all the countries that Henry Kissinger was involved in creating wars, so that he, in his little mind, through the Council on Foreign Relations and when he was Secretary of State and when he was with Nixon and giving advice to all those people, and still is, he says there can only be one superior nation, and he said it was America, but now he says it's China. And if you go back, I just found that from the beginning, George H.W. Bush, when he was the representative of the United Nations, in his third reference to the New World Order, stated not only that it was for security, but stated that it could only be ran by one nation and that there was only one nation on earth that could run it, China. I didn't know that.
I missed that.
I got his own words stating that the New World Order would simply be an extension of the peacekeeping forces of the United Nations and all their agencies in the United Nations. But there was only one nation that would actually, and Henry Kissinger said this too, and he still says it to this day, only one nation could really be in charge of the United Nations or globalism or the New World Order, and that's China. And that's because it only works with communism and totalitarian dictatorship and war. And since the wars are now going on in our bloodstream through the pharmacy, we're not going to go to war with China. That'd be crazy. Their economy would collapse if they went to war with us. Hello? Look what happened with Trump, with just taking away a couple hundred billion. They're collapsing. The worst, 67% down in their GDP in China in 2 years. China is collapsing, and there's not going to be a war with China. We're done with conventional wars except for propaganda nonsense. And Trump has pointed that out. You don't need to. Why do you go to war? Let's just send some drones. Let's send some planes. We don't need to put soldiers in the way of bullets. And so what I'm saying is, you have discovered that the Pilgrim Society goes back to Cecil Rhodes and his roundtable and his experiments in South Africa with war, with famine, with pharmaceutical manipulation, with vaccines. And specifically, look at Cecil Rhodes. He got the gold from Rhodesia. He got the gold from South Africa. We got the diamond. It's always about what the bankers want. It has nothing to do with war.
Yep. Yeah, that's what we're doing right now is we're deconstructing the histories that we've all learned. And now we're seeing what was really going on. And I agree with you. World War One and World War Two were both intended to consolidate the power of the Pilgrim Society toward this one world government. And you're right, they've used war because they can make money from it. They can achieve their eugenic objectives with depopulation, and they can use every crisis to further establish their control over whatever, whoever they've decided to attack at any given time. But if we go back to 73, and the reason I want to go back to 73 is because I vividly remember coming back from my classes at Ohio State, sitting down for lunch and watching the Watergate hearings, and always wondering, was it really just a petty burglary that caused all this stuff? And what we can see now from looking at the full record of the Nixon White House during 73, and there's a lot of information out there, is that the Nixon's secretary, Rosemary Wood, I actually took really good notes, very thorough notes. And she actually had name, full names of all the people and their titles whenever there was a meeting. So we have a complete record of the meetings in August when they came together to kill the gold standard. And so we started going through each of the names there. Now, the curious thing is, if you go onto the State Department website right now, they talk about this meeting briefly. They don't give a full list of who was participating, but it goes out of its way to say Henry Kissinger wasn't there. And I thought, well, whenever they do that, they're hiding something. So what we did is we looked at Nixon's schedule in the weeks before that event and the weeks after that event, and guess who was there 2, 3, 4 times a day?
Heinz Loeb?
Oh, there you go. Yeah, he was hovering over these meetings, hovering. And he even was making calls into the Camp David to speak with George Shultz during the meetings. So he obviously wasn't there. He chose not to be there. But he even met with Nixon the morning of the day that Nixon flew out to Camp David. So Henry was really organizing this thing, because what we see is he sent Volcker over to London to get the praise, I'm sure, of his Pilgrim Society handlers. And we then watched them during that summer get organized. So by December, Henry has made his big announcement at a Pilgrim Society dinner in London to begin the Arab oil crisis. And Kissinger always does this. He always talks about grave concerns about imminent doom. And then he said, but it's always an opportunity to do this or that or the other. Watch him. I've seen a lot of his videos now, and he does that every time. And that's a technique, because he doesn't want to depress people. He wants to give them hope at the end of it. But his agenda is what he said at the beginning. And he's wanting you to go along with it. So it's a good stall tactic. So here we see Henry running the White House from his perch as Secretary of State. And then we see him trotting the globe as a dutiful representative of the Pilgrim Society, supposedly of the United States. But then we also saw that after he did all that, the Queen gave him a special honor. Did you know that he can't be called a sir, but he's got the title of a sir? And what we noticed is that General Haig, who was also at these meetings, has titles. We see Caspar Weinberger, who was the defense secretary at the time, has titles. And so what we concluded from this list is that at least 11 of the 13 people at this meeting were all members of the Pilgrim Society. So we see the British thoroughly running U.S. policy, and Nixon was going along with it. So I'm not sure what happened in their relationship, but they obviously decided they didn't want him anymore, and they moved on. But Kissinger seems to just jump from top position to top position throughout his career. I mean, he's lived a blessed life from a standpoint of a straight resume, but it's way too long to be a real resume. It's clearly somebody who is being placed at these organizations to fulfill an objective. So then we swing it forward, and we couldn't believe our luck, because we couldn't find any last 20 year evidence of Kissinger's involvement with the Pilgrims until we get him into the run up to the bank, 2008 bank bailout. And then we find Volcker and Kissinger moved in as officers of the American Pilgrim Society. Boom. They couldn't stand it. They had to show off.
Oh yeah. That's the problem when they're bragging. Like, look at Kissinger and Associates, right? He founds a group that is a consulting agency for everyone, including our enemies. Correct. And who's his number one people he represents? How about APCO Worldwide, the corrupt organization that Hillary Clinton had in her pocket? that we know committed crimes around Uranium One, the Blackstone Group. Oh, well, that you can't get any bigger CIA, rogue CIA criminal stolen gold support than Blackstone. How about Hacklewit and Company, the group that created the coup, helped create the coup against Donald Trump? That's one of the people that he's helping. And then, Covington and Burling. I know you love them. And, you know, he represents the most criminal people on the face of the earth. The only people worse than Kissinger Associates is GPS, Fusion GPS, which basically represents dictators more than they represent Americans. And then look at the staff.
Wait, you're still on names. Do you have Rio Tinto in your list?
He advises
Rio Tinto, a Queens golden share company. The Rio Tinto Resource Group has been around since the 1800s. Lord Milner was a director and chairman for years, and we've now traced them right back to the whole Uranium One scandal. And Rio Tinto is the primary mining resource of the British Empire. And Kissinger's advising them too.
Well, I feel comforted in knowing that John Brennan works for Kissinger and Associates now. You know, the man who sold out America, who was conducting his own personal coup against Trump and is the biggest liar and is, that's one of his people. How about Brent Scowcroft? Mm. Oh my gosh, I cannot begin to tell you how corrupt that man is. But then you got, Geithner here, the head of the U.S., previous Timothy Geithner, the head of the Treasury. You got the biggest names in history for America currently who are corrupt going over to Kissinger and Associates to tell our enemies how to attack us. And I'm not making this up. He is right. The number one consultant for China.
Right.
So what we're talking about here is this is still going on. This has not even slowed down. It is now on steroids, and Henry Kissinger should be put in jail.
Well, let me tell you, in my humble opinion, that non-disclosure of the Pilgrims in 73 is actionable evidence of a crime that could only have been proven by some level of evidence that would prove that he actually has a relationship with the Pilgrim Society. And when he puts his name on as an officer in 2007, 2008, right before the bank bailout, how much more do we need to know that 1973 non-disclosure was evidence of fraud, was evidence of racketeering, and is actionable now? If we had a Justice Department that was paying attention.
Precisely. And when they took us off the gold standard by the advice of the Pilgrims, that was so that the Pilgrims could then launder their money to all the central banks, just like you pointed out when Paul Volcker, once they decided this, and George Shultz, I guess we should never underestimate the evil of George Shultz, but when Volcker was done with the decision, what did he do? Insider trading. He went to all the Pilgrims from the central banks from all the different countries, had a meeting. As you said, they just happened to all gather together, minutes after the decision was made. Oh, yeah, right. They just happened to be there when he arrived.
In secret at Camp David, and all of a sudden they're all there the next day in London. Yeah.
In other words, being told what was going to happen so they could manipulate the markets. It's as simple as that. If that isn't corruption, it's kind of like when they ask Henry Paulson and remember what you have pointed out, that the Pilgrim Society was taken over by Henry Kissinger and Paul Volcker in 2007, leading up to the crash. Why? So that all the insider trading could go down, so that then you could literally have testimony of the U.S. The head of the U.S. Federal Reserve at that moment in 2008, after we gave out billions of dollars, he said, he was asked, where did the money go? And he says, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then they, does anybody know? And he goes, no, no one knows where it went. Well, that's the kind of people we're dealing with.
We can now see that whenever they answer that, it had to go to do some transaction with the Bank for International Settlements and gold. So presumably they were using fiat cash then to start moving some of that gold around. And notice how they invest in these huge gold mines. Well, there's already been proven fraud from the Civil War days that if you wanted to launder gold, one of the easiest ways to do it was send it out to some gold cave where they're mining for gold. And then all of a sudden, eureka, you find it. You shave it down into little shavings. Then you bring it out as new gold. And they're doing that in spades right now, I think, with Barrick Gold and with what's the one at BHP in Australia?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Shanghai gold market and the Nova Scotia gold market. You just mentioned Barrick Gold. Let's remember that the head of Barrick Gold is the one who gave the money to the Clintons for Uranium One. And Barrick Gold, what was the first thing that George H.W. Bush did when he was no longer president? Opened Barrick Gold. Oh, after he had, as president, sold three dead mines that had no gold in it whatsoever for next to nothing. And then magically, Barrick goes there and in, I think it was one or 2 years, finds the largest amount of gold that anybody could ever find anywhere. And now they flood the market. But they don't really give you any gold. They sell you paper gold on the gold that they say is in the ground. Yes. Well, that made George H.W. Bush, from being a millionaire, turned him into a billionaire overnight. And this was just one of his scams. And who was with him? Adnan Khashoggi, the biggest weapons dealer, was the one who gave the money for George to buy the mines, all constructed ahead of time, because Adnan Khashoggi was one of George Bush's best friends, and he worked with him and his two intelligence agencies, Far West Intelligence, once George H.W. Bush got out of office. And then he, of course, joined Carlyle Group, which had over 400 militarized companies who got the greatest amount of no-bid contracts. Matter of fact, Halliburton got so many contracts in Iraq, all no-bid contracts, and then KBR got no-bid contracts. This is all George H.W. Bush.
Since you just mentioned Carlyle Group, I need to point out that we now know that in England in 2002, the British government started Kinetic, Q-I-N-E-T-I-Q, and that money for Kinetic started with Carlyle Group. They were the original investor. Kinetic then became a Queen's Golden Share company. And then within a few years, we started seeing American officials pop up on the directorship of Kinetic. And now today, Kinetic and Serco probably have more contracts with the Navy than any contractor in the U.S. So here we see this Pilgrim Society strategy being lived out in the U.S. through the senior executive service, where they're feeding posh contracts to the British through their American subsidiaries, which are still controlled by London. And we see Henry Kissinger orchestrating these relationships to continue this mechanism of starting wars in order to deflate markets and make money using the Bank for International Settlement as a mechanism for collateralizing funds and opportunities in a down market. And then the gold never leaves. So it's a brilliant, if you're a bad guy, it's a brilliant way to operate. And I think during World War II, these guys we already know there's strong records that many of the agents of the OSS were already starting to use that gold in various side deals during the war. And far from reining all that in, Truman let it all go, and he let Dulles run roughshod over every ethic we've ever had in our lives about being moral, and treating others as you would have them treat you. And so that's the moral ethic that we have inherited to this day in our economy. And when you see that, it explains why we're in such a mess, because we've had these very deep-seated immoral individuals grabbing power, manipulating other people for their own ends, and that continues. And yet they've used propaganda, which is another big aspect of their strategy, to tell lies whenever their story starts to come out. And one of their biggest propaganda wins was conspiracy theory.
Yes, I believe that Henry Kissinger was one of the first people on the U.S. What was it called? It was PSYOPs, basically, but there was a name for it, Behavioral Strategy Committee or something. It was nothing more than war propaganda, and he knows that he has to have this. Now, I want to explain something. In the old days, wars were created not only just to steal stuff from the enemy, but specifically World War I was created to steal patents, because technology and patents are what creates the machines of war. But now I'm talking conventional war, missiles and bombs and bullets and ships and all this kind of stuff. Well, that was the old way to do it, okay? And then what they found is, hey, look at this. Why don't we just steal the gold? Why don't we just go have wars between nations, as many nations as possible, and then we go and we steal their gold and make sure everybody tries to get on a gold standard to meet the American standard, the gold standard, and everybody gets all the gold they can, and then we take the gold. Well, that's old hat. But in the last 20, 30 years, all you have to say is, I wonder why that war happened. And you can include always oil. As a matter of fact, in the last 10 years, anytime that anything's happening, literally I can name a pipeline, an oil pipeline that caused that conflict, period. Literally, in every case that you can think of in the Middle East and the Near East and the Levant and so on and so forth. So oil was a really, really big deal. And then remember when uranium, they realized that uranium is worth more than gold when it's enriched, and plutonium is worth more than that. And so let's build a bunch of atomic nuclear reactors and then let Russia have our uranium market. And then what happened? The Brits came in through Uranco and tried to steal the Russian control of our uranium. Imagine that here in America, our uranium used in our atomic nuclear power plants, and the uranium that, by the way, we haven't dismantled a lot of our missiles, but Russia did, and they took that uranium and sold it to us. Complicated process. We've done intelligence reports on it, but during the Bill Clinton time, they made so much money from uranium, you can't even name it, and that doesn't include the Uranium One deal, which was a big fake deal. So uranium was there. But now, oh, no, no. Now the Brits have moved to, by the way, the Brits are behind all that. Now the Brits have moved to Purbright Institute's patent on a man-made virus called coronavirus 19 or version 2, 2019. So the coronavirus.
Let's be clear. On the patent, it just says coronavirus.
Exactly.
It doesn't use the number 19.
And you're an expert in this. Can they patent a virus that happens in nature?
No.
It had to be man-made.
It has to be some novel aspect to it that doesn't appear in nature.
And we also know that they didn't release this, and we know that the British released it in China. They didn't release it until they knew that they already had the vaccine. And that's why AstraZeneca is producing untold millions of this vaccine, which has not been tested on animals or humans, and magically just appeared and even beat Moderna and Pfizer and everybody else to the punch, when in fact, didn't you say AstraZeneca really isn't all, their main business isn't vaccines?
AstraZeneca is a spinoff of a munitions manufacturer called ICI.
Which underscores my point.
Imperial Chemical Industries.
Mm-hmm. They went from war, conventional war, to war on your bloodstream, the vaccine, the pharmaceutical wars. And it's the same people.
Yep. Yeah, that was all directed by Victor Rothschild, Lord Victor Rothschild, who wrote a very big report in 1970 during the Thatcher administration, where he advocated a whole reorganization of the British research business, where they would farm it out to private companies. And I have to smile when I think of that now. And they thought that was a genius way to do it. And all they did was they picked their crony winners. And those are the cronies today that we're dealing with. And one of them is AstraZeneca. And that was all directed by Lord Rothschild. He founded the modern biotech financing industry almost by himself. And most of those records are not available, but one of his advisors, a Nobel Prize winner, Sidney Brenner, in his archives had some documents from Victor Rothschild and in his own handwriting in some cases, and then also several financial reports from the Financial Times that describe all the early deals that he did in biotech. And it's evident now, looking back at now that we know their strategy, seeing their mentality for moving, as you say, from a physical war to a war in the bloodstream. And they were very committed to that to this day. And it started in 1973. And it really didn't get momentum until about 81.
Bullingham, what's her last name? Bullingham?
Elizabeth Manningham Bueller.
Manningham Bueller. Who was the head of, was it MI5. So the head of intelligence then moves over and is the head now of Muriel Animal Institute, right?
The Purbright Institute. And she's Purbright. Running the Purbright Institute.
Yes. And Purbright, of course, invented this and disseminated it. And I just want to point out that Purbright is connected to the Muriel Institute for animals. And they have the biggest contracts in the world to put vaccines in animal food. So well, let me say connected, they put it in our food.
When you say connected, Muriel Animal Health manufactured vaccines on the Purbright facility. Exactly. So, and this facility was given to that land was given to the British government for this use by Henry de Worms, who was a Rothschild. And also a very powerful member of parliament who was a contemporary of Cecil Rhodes and really pushed him forward. And what we now see is that in the late 1880s, 1890s, that was when the British decided they were going to reorganize the empire around these fantastical corporations that were going to drive every aspect of our economies going forward. And they would give themselves knighthoods and honors and titles to stroke everyone's ego that they needed to stroke along the way in order to either grab loyalty or silence. And that's what they've been doing ever since. They then also created the Knights of Malta English Priory by the order of the Queen, Victoria. And that has, in fact, been one of the aspects of this research, which is quite interesting because we always thought of honors and titles as something the Queen gave out, but she has a whole private collection of honors and titles through the Knights of Malta English Priory. And she has been liberal with giving those titles to Americans to this day, including John Roberts.
Well, I'm pretty sure that Averill Harriman is a pilgrim, he would have to be, and that, you know, he's probably got a knighthood of some sort, because remember, he became one of the richest men in America at the time, because his wife was one of the richest women in England at the time. And so Averill Harriman, just as an example, Brown Brothers Harriman and Union Bank, that was Hitler's bank. So here you have a man who was in every position you can practically be in government, in the federal government, elected official, from their state and in the House and Senate and then in the White House and then every single job you can possibly have of a sensitive nature, Averill Harriman had. He is the one who chose Nixon. He's the one, his wife chose Bill Clinton and supported them. That was the money behind Bill Clinton, was Averill Harriman's wife. Now, Averill Harriman was the banker of Hitler. So in the old days, conventional warfare was you loan money to both sides of the war. Afterwards, they're both going to owe you money. and there'll probably be some booty that the winners will have to pay you back. You can write off the debt to the other ones, but you'll also collect their assets against the debt, as well as during the war, you make a ton of money. So you make it from both sides.
You steal it.
Hand over fist.
Don't forget, Franklin Roosevelt confiscated over 50,000 Axis patents in 1942.
Exactly. Patents were top on the list in World War I and II to steal. So Averell Harriman then, after he is convicted for trading with the enemy and they confiscate his money, it doesn't matter because some say he was at one point with his associations worth $3 trillion. But anyway, Averell Harriman then does what? He gets put on the Marshall Plan. So he's standing there at the Yalta Conference, Averell Harriman in the background, smiling, knowing that he loaned the money to Hitler to create the war. He loaned the money to the Brits. He loaned money to the Americans. He loaned money to everyone involved. He also was there at this naval conference that militarized the naval capacities of Italy, Japan, and Germany, which is crazy. That was to create and foment war. And then he stands there at the peace conference and gets put on the Marshall Plan, which we know was a way to launder more money than anybody has ever been able to calculate so far. And the money is still being laundered. So we take a guy like that, a total criminal, total British agent, put him in the highest positions here, let his banks do the dirty work. His propaganda is so profound that then the president sends him to create peace with the country that he loaned money to create the war.
It's stunning. It's stunning. The Marshall Plan was obviously a way for them to start leveraging the Bank for International Settlements in secret for their banks to finance their companies who would get all the contracts to rebuild Europe, and they would carry forward their leveraging. They created more wars. How many years was it? That 5 years they created the Korean War, and then that wasn't good enough. So Kissinger and Rusk and Acheson and Stimson, they said, let's start the Vietnam War. That's a good place. We'll stop the commies in Vietnam. Okay, that's a good idea. We did such a good job in Korea. We'll just keep going. And it makes me really angry because my father and my wife's father were both foot soldiers in World War II, and thankfully they both came home, but some of their friends did not. And so now what we're seeing is these guys were manipulating the good intentions of average moral people for their immoral, demonic desire for power, and they justify it all. Someone in Betsy's downline found a video which was unbelievable. It was a 1930 film of the Pilgrim Society meeting at a naval conference. This is 10 years before World War II, where Japan, Italy, France, the UK, and America have all their officials there, and they're getting toasted by the Pilgrim Society, and they're announcing their intentions to form a naval blockade, not blockade, but to basically control the navies. And clearly what's going on there is the Pilgrims want to control the navies, and they're getting these people to go along with it. I guess they weren't too successful because Italy and Japan jumped out of their little plan. And yet we see Stimson there. He's sitting at the head table next to Lord Edward Grey. And in that image, Lord Edward Grey is the guy with the dark glasses. He's almost blind by then. He was at the Imperial Press Conference in 1909, and he was a founder of the Pilgrims. Here's Stimson, our then Secretary of State, who had been Secretary of War, and then became a Secretary of War again in 1940 through 1945. We see in this one video a keystone that pulls it all together. It was a fascinating find, and it was produced by the Associated Press recently, who had acquired rights to British movie tones. And so, and this was right at the beginning of the newsreels that they used to play in the cinemas of news from overseas. And it's their volume one. It's their first year of operation of these new things called talkie films. And so one of the keys that they wanted to promote was this Pilgrim Society and their activities around the world. So we see Stimson. We have links to his testimony in Congress proposing the Marshall Plan, along with Dean Acheson. And as you say, Harriman's on the list, as are about a third of the people on this list of 300 are bankers. And so J.P. Morgan's there, Chase is there, Rockefellers are there, Warburg, you name it. We can now see that that was where this stolen gold that they had socked away in Switzerland was going to be used to consolidate their power all over the world. Kissinger was young then, but he was certainly aware of what was going on. And then later was pushed forward in an amazing catapult from being a intelligence officer in U.S. Army to running the U.S. Because there is by 1973, we see complaints in Congress that Kissinger has taken over control in the Nixon White House of all intelligence in the United States. And of course, that would be run by MI6. So it's all there.
And I just want to point out that you just mentioned Henry de Worms, who was a Rothschild. Yes. And he was Lord Pirbright.
Yep.
And he's the one who got all this horrible stuff that Wellcome Trust had already been doing and turned it into really a war, really, against humanity. But now I want to point out that Kissinger, good old Heinz Loeb, or pronouncing it in the German way, Loeb. Heinz Loeb was one of his first tasks as he got pumped up from intelligence to counterintelligence was then collecting treasure. And where did they assign him? Oh, the home of the Rothschilds, Count Hesse, Frankfurt, the home of the German bankers. Okay, they, you know, we can go into great detail, but the majority of the big German bankers were in Frankfurt, and that's where Henry Kissinger went and magically became so recognized for his fantastic work that he was promoted to levels that he can't even be promoted for unless you're in combat. So they made up lies about Kissinger being in combat. They made up lies about Winston Churchill being in combat. But anyway, it was in the city of Frankfurt, the Prince Hesse, who was the sponsor of the Rothschilds. So the Rothschild money and the German banking was all in Frankfurt. So when Henry Kissinger went there as a traitor to his own German people, what do you think he found at all those banks? He found the gold. He found everything, anything of any value. And if it was of any value, it certainly had a representation in Frankfurt. So that's why I believe you're absolutely right that after that and after basically fleecing Germany as a, I don't know, an inquisitor, I guess I'd call him a war inquisitor, he was able to go across the channel and just be, you know, recognized by the pilgrims and the queen and everybody. And then he comes to America as a British spy. Well, remember, he had already immigrated to America, and then he was drafted. Then he went back to his country, Germany, fought against his own people. Then he fought against Americans by becoming a Brit, and then he came to America as a globalist, so he's fighting against everybody. But he clearly states that the United Nations was supposed to be the takeover control mechanism and that it was completely British-controlled, and that, as I said, that it was going to be all handed over to China. So this is the man who, when Trump was first elected, Trump went to see him immediately. And we all laughed. And I said, I'll tell you what Kissinger is going to say. You need to just throw in the towel because China's taking over. And then Kissinger was brought to the White House twice. And once he was completely ignored. And then when Bannon was fired, you got to see the scramble for China. So that the people who were the biggest promoters of China, Kissinger and his associates and the Council on Foreign Relations, including Steve Bannon, they were promoting China, and we were supposed to sell out to China as Hillary Clinton, as our new Queen of America, if she had been elected, President Queen of America, Hilda Beast, Clinton would have sold us out to China, and that would have been the end of America. And it would have all been supported by Henry Kissinger, because what did she say? Henry Kissinger is more than an advisor to me. He is my personal friend. And then she went on waxing poetic about how profound and incredible Henry Kissinger is. I've never heard him say anything profound. All I ever hear is what that film that Betsy posted, which is they took some words. He basically says, kill everybody. Kill.
It's a common shtick. I will point out there's another key China promoter in 2008, and that was James W. Breyer, who at the time was the chairman of Facebook. And he's the former chairman of the National Venture Capital Association in 2004. So by 2008, he's telling entrepreneurs, in this case, this video was from Germany, he's telling German entrepreneurs, and through video, the rest of the world, that he's super bullish. And this is an exact quote: I am super bullish on China. And he's telling them, go to China, go to China, go to China. And he's also telling them, by the way, get into apps, because what he knows is he stole that technology from us, along with IBM, and they had planned to shove all of their control of worldwide technology into social applications. And that was a part of this whole communication strategy that we see going back to the Pilgrims, back to the formation of the Empire Press Union, the Imperial Press Conference in 1909, which then created MI5, MI6, and GCHQ. So our American intelligence has always taken orders from Britain.
Well, Henry Kissinger and his group, both under George H.W. Bush and Baby Bush, called themselves Vulcans. They're not. They're vipers, and they're globalists, and they are killers and murderers, and it's all for their own self-aggrandizement. And so thank you for doing the one thing that even Averill Harriman says is the biggest danger to him and all of his compatriots, and that is to be exposed.
Well, I need to send kudos out to a whole bunch of people that were involved in this research. So I know you're speaking just of me, but there were a lot of people involved, and most of them don't want their names used. But this information has come in from literally all over the planet. And one of the reasons it took us so long to put it together, because there was none of this information had been packaged in a Pilgrim Society story. None of it. I mean, it is amazing how the Pilgrim Society is the most powerful organization on the planet, and yet how little is actually known. And when you look at the picture of their address in England, you see this very humble detached cottage, basically, in London that's housing the power center of the planet right now. But can you imagine if we actually went to a moral system rather than this immoral system that these guys created? We have suffered our entire lives, our parents' lives, our grandparents' lives, at the hands of these people who were going to rob every aspect of our enterprises forever. That was their plan. But hopefully, with Donald Trump in power and with this awareness, growing awareness, quick awareness of who the enemy actually is and what they're doing, this can be corrected very quickly, because it is all about money in the end.
I just have to salute you. You're correct. You and your miners have dug all the way through to China and found the Chinese gold, the Yamashita gold, the golden lily gold. You dug all the way to Germany and you found the gold. You dug to Switzerland and you found the gold. And so thank you for finding these sources. And what is amazing, and we will tell you in the next broadcast, but we're not going to tell you now, is that Michael McKibben and his miners have found the exact caves that the gold was stored in by the Japanese. But we're not going to tell you that story until next time. So, Michael, thank you again for pulling the linchpin on the globalist world machine of war and propaganda and vaccinations and pharmaceutical wars on us. So fortunate that you found the linchpin. You know, as an engineer, they shouldn't put linchpins in things. But thank you for pulling it.